All right. As promised, we're going to talk a little NFL. There's so much news going on. This is an exciting time of the year with franchise tags and players being released, such as Jamaal Charles of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Vikings not exercising the option on Adrian Peterson. And there will be others to follow. But there's some big names that are available right now, Doug.
Yeah, there are. And it's going to be interesting to see. Because also, Grant, you got to understand the draft's coming. So if the draft's coming, that's going to dictate what you do. Some of these teams who might want to pick up some of these big-name free agents or guys that have been released may draft that position as well.
All right, John McMullen, FanRag, national NFL reporter and ESPN Radio, joining us. John, good to have you on. Grant Napier and Doug Christie, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, listen, there's a lot going on. I want to start with Kirk Cousins and Washington. And I it's always easy to look back and say should have, could have. But in retrospect, did the Redskins miscalculate the market? Did the Redskins make a mistake by not just giving this guy a deal last year? Give me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, they did. And I think they didn't realize the cost of doing business at that position in the league. I mean, if you go back to last season, basically, Sam Bradford and Brock Osweiler set the market, and that was $18 million a year. And by all accounts, the Redskins probably could have had Kirk Cousins for $17 million on a long-term deal. That would have been a bargain. And they were concerned, was he the answer? Is he not the answer? Then you fast forward, he plays well enough to the fact that you have consecutive franchise tags. So by the time the 2017 season is over, guys, Kirk Cousins will have made $44 million over the past two seasons. And, by the way, he's under 500 as a starter. He's 2-11 against teams that are over 500 when he plays them as a starter. And, by the way, I don't disagree with the fact that he's worth the money. As I said, that's just the cost of doing business in this league. And the Redskins made a mistake because he's played this very, very well. And as I said, that $44 million, and on top of that, he's going to be a free agent, completely free, in 2018 because you can't franchise somebody for three consecutive years. So if there's one thing about Kirk Cousins, maybe his best skill set is making money.
Wow. When you look at the Vikings, Adrian Peterson, everything that's going on there, a guy that's released, there are many, saying where he might land. What do you see his ability at his age to be able to deliver for a team, and where might be a landing place for him, John?
Well, it's interesting because you're talking about, I think, certainly the best runner of this generation. I think he's the best pure runner since Jim Brown. That's how good he is. But I use that word for a reason. He's not a great running back, and he never really was because he doesn't catch the ball out of the backfield well. He's not very good in pass protection. So you look at a guy who's past 30, who's had injury concerns, and we all know what that demarcation line means for running backs in the NFL. History proves it. So I don't know how much is left in the tank, but I think the reputation is going to make somebody say, you know, if we can get just a little bit of the old Adrian Peterson as a two-down runner, you really, really have something. And I think Tampa Bay makes a lot of sense. The New York Giants make a lot of sense. I think I wouldn't even close the door on Minnesota, although I think it's unlikely. If you were willing to come back to a $5-6 million contract with incentives, that could be a possibility. But I think people have to understand this is not the MVP Adrian Peterson. This is a two down guy, and he's going to be a part time player.
We're talking NFL football with John McMullen, ESPN Radio, and FanRag national NFL reporter. All right, so we get to Tony Romo, and we take out a crystal ball. Would he play for less to go somewhere else? Will we see him wearing a different uniform when training camp opens at the end of July?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dallas obviously can't bring him back. You can't pay a backup quarterback $24 million. That's just the nature of it. That's what his cap number would be in Dallas. So
there's no chance, is what you're telling me, despite Jerry Jones' love affair for the guy, you're saying there's no chance he remains in Dallas?
Absolutely none.
Okay.
The only question is, are they able to trade him and get something back, or are the more likely scenarios they're going to have to release him, because his cap number is not bad for another team. It's only $14 million. But if you're the Denver Broncos or the Kansas City Chiefs, the Houston Texans, Buffalo Bills, some of the teams people have speculated Tony going to, you understand that the Cowboys don't have any leverage. And you can wait it out and wait for him to release them and probably work out a deal that's even more desirous than that, because the reality is Tony's going to be a 37-year-old guy with significant injury history. And if he wants to go win a Super Bowl, he's got the opportunity, because he can fit right into the Denver Broncos, be the starting quarterback on that team, and they are an instant Super Bowl contender if they can keep him healthy. And they could probably get him for $10, $11 million a year. And I think that's the likely end game that's going to happen here.
John, when you talk about Tony Romo, he's going to need an offensive line with his history. So you look at Denver with the, you know, great defense, but where's probably the best place that's going to be able to protect him? Because that's how you're going to keep him healthy.
Well, I think if you look at those particular teams, I think, you know, if you look around the NFL, offensive lines, it's a big issue.
Right.
It really is. Some of the better teams, Seattle, for instance, probably has one of the two or three worst offensive lines in football. We just mentioned Minnesota. Their entire collapse was due to having perhaps the worst offensive line.
Yeah, good point.
So if you, other than Dallas, which is phenomenal up front, there aren't a lot of teams that don't have holes. And a lot of it points to how the game has morphed at the college level, because there's so many spread offenses in college. The linemen are taught to hold their blocks for maybe a second or two before the ball is out. In the NFL, it's a completely different thing. So you're learning how to play the game at the professional level. It's really, really difficult. And the bottom line is, of those teams I mentioned, they all have holes on the offensive line. Broncos, Chiefs, Texans, Bills. So he's not going to find a perfect situation.
You know, in Oakland, Derek Carr came out in support of Latavius Murray. The prevailing thought is Raiders are not spending that kind of money on a running back. They're not going to do it for Latavius Murray. Where do you see them? I mean, we know they got a prolific offense with Carr healthy, with Cooper. They've rebuilt their offensive line. They're one of the teams that now does have one of the top offensive lines. How valuable do you look at the running back in that offense?
Not very. I agree. They're going to let Murray walk. And part of it is because if you get to free agency, by the nature of it, if you're coming off, if you check all the boxes, and Murray does, basically he's at the age, he's coming off his first contract, so he's still in the prime of his career. He's produced some. He had the 12-touchdown season last year. But the Raiders have younger backs, cheaper backs, and he's not an explosive guy. He's not Adrian Peterson in his prime. So he's a solid player, but once he gets to the open market, he's going to be overpaid. So I think the Raiders and Reggie McKenzie understand that. And unfortunately, you can't keep everybody. And I think that's the mentality there, is that somebody's going to give them too much money. And the Raiders are not going to make the mistake of being too loyal to a guy and overpaying him.
John, when you look at a guy like DeSean Jackson, and obviously with Kirk Cousins, that whole thing, I'm sure that that's probably going to affect them being able to get free agents. But whether it's the Buccaneers, the Rams, maybe even back to the Eagles, this type, I mean, he's still in his prime, that type of downfield ability, how, you know, who might want him and really be ready to pay some good money?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with Tampa Bay. I think that's the most logical fit, because they kind of feel they're a piece or two away from being a legitimate Super Bowl playoff contender, not necessarily Super Bowl. But I don't think Philadelphia makes a lot of sense because of his age. He's over 30. He doesn't check all those boxes. While he is still a very productive player,
right?
He also projects as the guy who, when he does lose it, he's going to go downhill quickly because, okay, really, he's all about his speed, and he's never been the best route runner in the world. He can't, because of his size, he can't move around all that much in formations. He's not one of those type players. So, like his teammate, Pierre Garçon, who obviously doesn't have that speed, but he's so physical. He can run routes. So he projects to age better than DeSean Jackson. So I think you have to be very wary signing him to a long-term deal because you probably get one or two good years, and that might be it.
You know, we're talking NFL football right here on the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie, and we are with John McMullen, FanRag national NFL reporter on ESPN Radio. No pun intended, but has anyone fallen off an island quicker than Terrell Revis in 1 year? And with everything that's going on with him from a legal perspective, which is still, you know, we don't know yet, but the Jets releasing him, no surprise there. But you look at his play on the field, forget his off-the-field issues right now. I mean, I'm asking you, John, you've covered the NFL for a long time. I mean, the fallout and the fall off, I should say, on this guy was just incredible last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it happens quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what I was kind of saying with DeSean Jackson. Think about Peyton Manning, guys. He threw for 55 touchdowns.
It's a great, great point.
Piloted,
yep,
the first offense to ever score 600 points, the only offense still to ever score over 600 points. 2 years later, he was shot physically. He was completely done. So it happens quickly, and it happened really quickly to Darrell Revis, and it's unfortunate because when you see somebody who's certainly the best cornerback of this generation, surefire Hall of Famer, lockdown corner, and all of a sudden he shows up and he can't cover anybody, it's tough to watch. It's tough to see, but that's just the nature of aging in professional sports.
Pittsburgh Steelers, incredible organization. They've made a commitment to Antonio Brown, 4 years, $68 million. Now the highest paid receiver, Le'Veon Bell, they franchise tag him. What does maybe that tell you about Ben Roethlisberger and his comments maybe about retiring because of the connection with he and Antonio Brown? Might we see Big Ben back?
Yeah, he's going to play. I mean, first of all, he's not going to write a check for $18 million and get that back to the Steelers. So that's
right.
Number one. But, you know, football is such a grind emotionally, and it happens to a lot of guys. It happened to Carson Palmer, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once the season is over, and it certainly ends disappointingly for everybody but one team, you kind of, as an aging player, sometimes you sit back and say, do you want to go through this grind again? And it's so difficult to start at the bottom of the mountain. But generally, guys recharge their batteries, and 3 or 4 weeks later, they're ready to go. I think that's the case with Ben. And I think they're clearly, by franchising Le'Veon Bell and signing Antonio, they're, you know, indicating we're getting the band back together. They're very close. I agree with that. They're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And the window's small, though, because Ben doesn't have a lot of time left. So I think that's the prudent approach for the Pittsburgh Steelers to take.
Before we let you go, the 49ers, and I mean, they've got so many directions they can go in. And I guess, you know, with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, the first thing they have to do is figure out the quarterback. But if it's not Cap, I mean, geez, they don't really have a lot of choices right now, do they?
No, they don't. They're not going to be able to pry Cousins away unless they're willing to give up the farm. You know, not only the number two overall pick, but probably a future first rounder. I don't think they should do that. There's been speculation of going the bridge route, but Kyle's already said he'd like to find the long-term answer. So is it DeShone Kizer or DeShone Watson, Mitch Trubisky, or any of those guys worthy of being drafted that highly? Hey, that's what you do your due diligence for. I think Kizer has a huge ceiling in this league. He might not be ready to play right away, but I think he could be a superstar in this league. And we'll see how the combine and the pro days play out. But if that's the one young quarterback they can somehow get, whether it's trading down, whether it's moving around, we'll see. I think that's the one guy who can develop. But it's tough in this league. If you don't have a quarterback, you're searching desperately for one.
You know, they announced a four-year deal with Earl Mitchell, who was, you know, released by Miami. And I'm curious, you know, what was the deal in Miami? Was it just strictly because of money? Why did the Dolphins get rid of him? Was it strictly dollars?
Well, it was a salary cap issue, yeah. But they were disappointed in the way he played, particularly against the run. He was pretty good as a pass rusher on the interior. But that's one of those things where he was a pretty good player in Houston. And the San Francisco 49ers obviously believed that the Dolphins didn't use him correctly, didn't get out of him what they could or what they should have. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I give John Lynch a lot of credit for starting early, so to speak, and going on the street. Not only Earl Mitchell, but Kaywan Williams, the nickel corner they signed. I think that's a worthy gamble. He looked like he was turning into a player 2 years ago before he got into the issues with Cleveland about his ankle injury. So it might not work out. He might not even be on the team. But I think it's a worthy gamble. And when you have one of the worst rosters in football, you got to sort of turn over every rock. So
yeah, you got to roll the dice.
I applaud John Lynch.
Do you think that Shanahan rolls the dice with a guy like Kaepernick and says, I think that I can fix him and I can make him work, especially when you talk about the taking a chance in the draft with some of these young quarterbacks?
Boy, I don't think so. And I just think Kyle's too smart of a guy as far as mentoring quarterbacks. Colin has taken such a step backwards at just as his mechanics and also, he's not the same guy physically for whatever reason. If you think about when he was taking the 49ers to the Super Bowl, the NFC Championship game, he was this big physical guy, and he's just not the same, whether it was the three surgeries, whether he's lost his passion for the game, I can only speculate. But he's not the same guy. And when you talk about it, he doesn't have that skill set any longer to be the dual threat or handle the pounding of a zone read kind of game, I think he loses the one special quality he has. And I think Kyle realizes that, and he knows he has to move on.
Final thing for you, John. We talked a lot about Adrian Peterson. Just throwing it out there, if you needed a running back and you had to choose between him or Jamaal Charles for one season next year, who are you taking?
Well, I'm really concerned about Jamaal Charles physically. They both had injury issues, but to me it's more concerning for Charles than Peterson. So I think Adrian's more likely to stay healthy. So I would have to say him simply because I think he's the guy that could be on the field. I'm not sure Jamaal Charles is ever going to be on the field.
Wow.
For 16 games again.
Yeah, boy, that's sad. John, great stuff. We really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. John McMullen,
yes,
good stuff right there as he breaks down the NFL, and he thinks Latavius Murray is gone. I agree. I don't think the Raiders, that's not a priority for them with their offense and their offensive line. When I say it's not a priority, I'm talking about from a financial perspective, it's not a priority. Yes, they want a good running back, but they're not going to break the bank for it. And I'll tell you, you know, he mentioned the Giants. You know me, I'm a Giants fan. If I'm looking at this from the Giants, I'll take Latavius Murray over Adrian Peterson any day of the week.
Yeah, for the Seahawks as well.
Yes.
I agree with that. And I think the Raiders got to be thinking. You got Jalen Richard. There's a bunch of running backs in the draft. And you pair that with a good offensive line. You can already throw the ball down the field.
Yep.
You're getting Carr back. So probably money well spent to not invest, Grant.
All right. If you want to react to anything that John said, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. If you're just joining us, Kevin Durant injured in the first half of the game at Washington, in which Washington leads 61-49 at the break. Zaza Pachulia's teammate stumbled and was backpedaling in a crouch position and collided into the knee of Kevin Durant. the word is hyperextended knee, and they will have an MRI tomorrow.
Fingers crossed for KD. You hate to see that absolute accident. You gotta watch yourself when you're in there. Stay light on your feet. I won't even go there. I was going to go someplace else with it. Grant, that's okay.
Oh, my gosh. So, again, good stuff. We're getting in the NFL talking. Hey, we'll also be doing some baseball here in the very near future with spring training, and the games both in the Cactus League and the Grapefruit League have begun. So that is good news. It means baseball right around the corner tomorrow, March 1st, and, of course, March Madness not too far off, including tournament round one and round two right here in Sacramento. All right, we'll be right back. This is Sports 1140 KHDK. Hey, don't forget to watch the Kings tomorrow. Get out at Golden 1 Center at 5:30. Join the KHDK Street Team from 5:30 to 7:30 and win awesome prizes. All right, let's get to Iman. What's up, Iman?
Hey, guys, how are you?
How are you today?
Good, great. Good to be talking to Grant and Doug. Doug, question for you. Grant, obviously elaborate also. The talent level right now, how would you assess it compared to when you were playing overall with all the teams?
In the NBA?
Yeah, in terms of, like, you know, 1 through 10. I'm not talking about just a Russell Westbrook's averaging triple-double, but I'm talking about, like, out of the top two guys of a team, the rest of the team, how does that compare to your era?
Man, that's a good question. I would have to think about it a little bit. What I will say is you're getting a really high level of skill. You're seeing skill development and things taking on a whole new thing. But that's a tough one. I mean, because there is a lot of talent out there in the NBA.
When Doug played, bigs didn't shoot threes.
Yeah, so you got Chris and you got Vlade. If Chris was playing today, I would assume he would be shooting three-pointers. But you had a lot more guys back to the basket. The game was played totally different. Now you have the size, with the exception, you think about that, Scal and Tentacumpo and all these different guys who are able to do so much. So that's a tough one, man. The skill level is definitely on the upswing, though. You're seeing guys with the ability to do a lot of different stuff out there.
Thanks, man. And then my other question is in regards to the offense and the coaching that we have. So Jaeger, they brought him in. They said a mostly defensive-minded guy. Ron Adeva is trying to be like the next Warriors for the most part with the run-and-gun offense. Is there a conflict of interest, number one and number two? If there's not, how does that change, and what is the approach now? Is it more offense or is it more defense with the Kings?
Well, I think that when you think about it, the Warriors, I believe, are number one or in the top two or three in defensive efficiency. So they are a good defensive team. They just play in a total different way as far as the high level of three-pointers that they shoot and the way that they play. So you want to be able to do both. I remember talking to Coach Jaeger and asking him that, and he wants the defense to create the offense and have that flow of the game at the same time. So you want to be able to do both. You have to be able to do both to win in this league.
Because now their roster is geared more towards a smaller lineup, and so they could get up and down the floor and less.
You mean numbers. Kings right now?
Yeah, would you agree?
Well, going forward, this isn't going to be, there are going to be a lot of changes. There are going to be different things that you see. There are a lot of players, I think, that are going to continue to be on this roster, but you're going to have to fill it in with needs and different things, whether that's a different type of power forward. You know, there's a lot of stuff. You're going to have to get a point guard, different stuff, and you got to see what is going to be the makeup and style of play as the Kings go forward.
And one last question, who is the best person you'd put at shooting guard right now with the roster that we have? And I'll take that question off
the best, the best player right now? All right, thank you for the call. When he comes back, Garrett Temple.
Yeah, you could say that. That is if you're looking for an all-around game. Oddly enough, Ben McLemore has been stroking the ball. So if you're looking for a scorer, Ben McLemore has been stroking it. Unfortunately, Malachi Richardson may have been filling that spot as well because of the way he was playing. But an all-around player, I would say Garrett hands down.
All right, let's get to Connor. Hello, Connor.
Hey, Grant. How you doing?
Good, Connor. What's happening?
Man, you know what? I just want to tell you, you've been spot on about this trade and everything. I couldn't agree with you more. As much as I love Big Cuz, you know, I see the future, and I think it's going to be good things. Hey, Dougie.
Yes, sir.
Thank you last night. My kid, it was his first game. He gave him a thumbs up. You see me every time. I'm the one yelling Dougie Fresh all the time, bud.
Appreciate you.
So, I love you, man. When Cousins got traded, my son was hysterical. He's 4, and he just loved Cousins. And it was pretty heartbreaking for him and for me to watch. But last night he said, Buddy Hield comes in, and I didn't even been talking about him, and he said, that's my new favorite player, Buddy Hield. And he just kept cheering for him the whole time, and Buddy gave him a thumbs up. It was just awesome, and it just made me think, as Sacramento Kings fans, I think we're a little too critical on the Kings a lot of the time, and we don't just, you know, we came from almost losing our team. And then last night, seeing how happy my kid was at the game, I feel like as fans, we just go too hard on the Kings. Like, hey, we should just be happy we have a team, because 4 years ago, we were about to lose them. So, I don't know. That's just my thing. I think Sacramento Kings fans are just too critical at times. But I guess that's being a fan, right?
Hey, listen, fans are fans. And, you know, listen, I get the fans' frustration here. I've been saying that, you know, every day for the last week. I think that the biggest thing that I have an issue with the fans is that the fans, some of the fans are acting like the Kings traded away a player that had him in the playoffs every year. The Kings were losing every year, every month with DeMarcus Cousins. And so I don't understand the outrage. Like, what did the Kings give up? They gave up a player that doesn't help you win. Yes, he's talented, but I said this the day after the trade. I'd rather lose without DeMarcus Cousins than lose with DeMarcus Cousins. And so if the Kings lose the majority of their games the rest of the year, I'm fine with that, because I like what I'm seeing with the young players, and it sets them up in the draft. And I know that this was never going to work, so I'm okay with trying something different. But I just don't understand the fans that, you know, the Kings lose 2 games in a row and they think that it was a terrible trade. The Kings didn't trade DeMarcus Cousins to get better this year. They traded DeMarcus Cousins to get better starting next year.
Right. And the other thing, I think people are just way too critical on Vlade. Like, they're blaming him. I see on, you know, I'm on Facebook or, you know, blogs or whatever, and I see people just bagging on Vlade. I like Vlade. I think everything he's doing, I mean, from Willie Cauley-Stein, the draft last year, you know, he turned 1 pick into 4 picks. You know, we still got Bogdan Bogdanović coming. I think I said his name,
yep,
right?
Yep, you did. Bogdan.
You know, it's there's a lot to look forward to, and people are bagging on Vlade. Do you know the mess he had to clean up that the Maloofs left? Like, and then Pete D'Alessandro didn't help. So,
you know, again, people are going to bag on whatever. When you, Connor, and thank you for the call. When you're losing a lot more than you're winning, people are going to bag on everything. They're going to bag on me. They're going to bag on, you know,
me.
And I really mean that. They're going to bag on everybody. That's just the way it is. That's life in professional sports.
Yes.
I get that. You know, I personally think a lot of the comments that are made towards Vlade Divac are highly unfair. Not because I like him, not because I think he's a great guy, but because I think that people haven't looked at what he's done since he's been here. Has he made some mistakes? Yeah, he has made some mistakes. But really, when you break down the majority of his moves, I can't really question him.
Well, when you look at the talent that he's beginning to bring in, whether it's Willie Cauley-Stein, whether it's Scow, Papianis is still, you know.
Yeah, we don't know. Right now, he doesn't look like he's going to make it, but we don't know.
He's 18 or 19 years old. He's going to have some work to do. You talk about the free agents that he's bringing, whether it's, Garrett Temple. These are moves that are going to help in the long run. And I said, this trade, you can't judge it. People know how my feelings about Boogie, but this trade is done. And you can't judge it until you look at the draft, see what's done, and begin to build that culture.
People criticize Vlade for not taking Marquise Chris. I'll tell you right now, I'll take Scal LaBeaussiere and Bogdan Bogdanović over Marquise Chris any freaking day of the week.
Well, what you're getting, I like Marquise Chris. I think he has incredible upside. But if you are gambling, Grant, you're getting 2 players – and you double your chance at the ability for them to be good, as opposed to one who you're just gambling on, where you got one who has an incredible high upside. You got another one who's shown that he could play at this level in the Olympics. Now he's going to have to come over here and prove it. But, yeah.
And again, I'm with you. I think Marquise Chriss does have an upside. And
no
I'm
doubt.
I'm not in any way, shape, or form insinuating that he's not going to be a good NBA player. But I would still take Scout LaBeseire and Bogdan Bogdanovic based on what I've seen and what I think I know over Marquise Chriss. And as far as Papianis, he's got a long way to go. You said it right. He's got a ways to go.
Oh, yeah. And in 24 months from now, even less, but if we say 24 months, we're going to have a different landscape of what the Kings are. Will they be winning? I'm thinking that they will, but you got to let that time because the players need to develop the style of play. Coach Yeager needs to be able to institute his defense and his offense with a solid rotation of players as opposed to trying to stopgap everything and try to figure it out on the go.
All right, we'll come right back. This is Sports 1140 KHDK. Grant Napier, Doug Christie.
What's up?
We got phone calls to get to, and we start with Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Mike.
Hey, I'm a true fan, and I agree with all the stuff. We got a lot of good pieces. I think Vlade's trade last year, ending up with four players, was wonderful. I'd rather have a Malachi Richardson taken late in the draft, late in the first round, than some of the guys that went ahead of him. That said, though, the negotiation that they did to trade DeMarcus was probably one of the worst negotiations I've ever seen. And it's not just Vlade's fault. It's Vivek's fault, too, because he must have let Vlade get too close to the deadline, so Vlade did not have time to develop a market for his player. So he didn't get a bidding war going, didn't get a lot of buzz going. And you listen to his comments at the end, and he says stuff like, I felt stuck. I was afraid I was going to get a worse deal. Well, when you negotiate from fear and you don't have a lot of options, you make a bad deal.
Well, there's also part of this is you're not privy to everything that was going on behind the scenes. And I will say that I'm not either. But I have had this verified by multiple sources, both in the league and outside of the league, meaning by NBA personnel that are currently employed by other NBA teams. I have talked to multiple agents. I have talked to multiple members of the national media. And the stark reality is, Mike, there were very few teams in the NBA that wanted DeMarcus Cousins on their team.
That's right. And that's why you have to create a market for a guy like that.
Mike, you can't create, Mike, you cannot create a market for someone when there isn't a market for that person. Mike, what is it that I just said that you don't believe? All right, there are 30 teams in the league. Minus the Kings, there are 29, okay? 25 teams, okay? 25 teams didn't even make a call. They didn't even want DeMarcus Cousins. Only four teams showed any interest in DeMarcus Cousins. What does that tell you?
Okay. You want to see the hallmark of bad negotiation? Part of negotiation is will. And you get to the end of the negotiation, when you've got the guys on the run, you ask for something that they have no business giving. And just watch your movie Draft Day. At the end, he goes, I want David Putney. Why? Because he knows he's got the guy on the run. Well, you know what the Pelicans did? They said, hey, let's make it a top three protected pick. So that's it's probably not going to happen. Probably. But suppose the Pelicans don't make it. Suppose they end up with a top three pick and DeMarcus Cousins, and we get a second rounder this year and a first rounder next year. Vlade's not going to have to wait 2 years to be out of here. Fans will be calling in here, and he'll be out of here. But
yeah, listen, I would agree with you. That narrative would be really, really bad if New Orleans gets lucky in the lottery, assuming they don't make the playoffs. And I'm not. There's too many games left to assume that.
You stand up to him with some stones, and you say, I'm giving you a top 10 player, and you don't get top three protection.
Mike?
I'm not going to put my fan base through that. I'm not going to make people worry till May or June to find out
May 16th.
If this terrible thing's going to happen.
Mike, I'll tell you what. I know Vlade pretty well, and what I'm going to do is, when he makes his next deal, I'm going to give him your information. You can help him out. All right, let's get to Mike. You're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie. Hi, Mike.
Grant, Doug, how's it going, guys?
What's happening?
Okay. I was at the Saturday. I was there, you know, had a great time for the season ticket holder party. It was awesome. My wife, my whole family got a photo off of Doug. I was like, hey, you know, I'm in line for Grant and Jerry, first off. So once I got in that line, I was super pumped. gave you guys a high five. It was awesome to see you guys. And hope I get this name right. I work at the firehouse, and a couple of weeks ago, Steve Holman, radio.
Yeah, Steve Holman's a great guy. Great guy.
Yeah, great guy. Little did I know, he's been doing radio for like 30
yep.
years.
He's a legend in Atlanta.
Yeah, and I asked him, I was like, hey, what do you think about Cousins with all the T's? And he's like, we call him Boogie Crazy. I was like, that's awesome. So
yeah.
Other than that, I just want to talk about my favorite guy, Vin Mack. He seems to be shooting the ball pretty well. And I know they're going to try to give more time to Buddy Hield. I just want to know, Doug and Grant, what do you guys think about that? Do you think they're going to share time, Buddy and Ben, or how do you think that's going
to
play out?
Well, Coach Yeager seemed to have been playing Ben at the three a little bit, so he's going to find time for everybody, on top of the fact that if you see and you watch Coach Yeager, you're going to earn your minutes. You got to get out there. You got to play. You got to produce. And he's allowing guys that opportunity. So the fact that Ben has now showed that he can play some of the three sometimes, and he and Buddy probably out there at the same time as sometimes. Now, when Garrett comes back, it's going to shave it down. If Lalo comes back. So Coach is going to have his hands full, but that is the nature of the beast. But I agree with you. Ben Mack has been playing some fantastic basketball.
Awesome. So thanks for showing my family a lot of love. Grant and Jerry, it was great to see you guys.
Well, thank you, Mike.
And Steve Holman, he was all about you, the G-Man, and that's about it.
Well, Steve thanks Holman's great, really great people and a hell of an announcer. I'm very happy you had a chance to meet him. He's a good guy.
Oh, it was awesome.
Hey, thank you very much.
I don't know who the other people were, but they're like these radio guys. And I'm like, what's going on with the radio guys? Who is this guy? And he's like, these radio guys, they're kind of like giving Steve Holman a few jabs. I didn't know who he was. And I'm just like, it was at the firehouse. I kept talking to him. And they're like, yeah, this is Steve Holman. He's been doing radio for like 30 years. I was like, wow, I'm talking to a legend. I didn't even know it.
Thanks for the call.
Appreciate you.
Somebody said on Adrian Wojnarowski's podcast, he stated that multiple GMs said they were not allowed or given opportunity to make an offer. That part disappoints. Who knows if Woj is right or your source? I believe that Adrian Wojnarowski's source on that is DeMarcus Cousins' agent, Dan Fagan. And Dan Fagan sabotaged a lot of opportunities for his client, including even New Orleans. He told Dell Demps, the general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans, that there's no way that my client is going to sign with you if you trade for him. Dan Fagan did not work in the best interest for DeMarcus Cousins. Now, I know you were going to tell me, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, and his responsibility is to get the most money for his client. No, it's not. His responsibility is to put his client in the best situation possible, and DeMarcus has been clamoring to play with Anthony Davis, has even talked about it. And matter of fact, it was even revealed after the trade that they had been talking about it this year, and Anthony Davis' retort was, I'm not going to Sacramento, so you're going to have to come here. Listen, Dan Fagan sabotaged deals for DeMarcus Cousins. All right, that's where I think Woj is getting his information from.
And you have to know, ladies and gentlemen, because we see out here 25 teams didn't know DeMarcus was available. You got to know that Vlade went under every single
Please.
Stone to try to make any and everything work. So just because you read it doesn't make it real.
All right, we'll come back with more of your phone calls here on Sports 1140 KHDK, hour number 4.